Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
All right, so we're back. We've joined the two shows together. We're back for another club season on the GER, and we've two new faces for our club season. We've gotten a lot of stick down through the last 5 years of not having a hurling person on the club season. Conan and Connor bluffed their way through. We had Mikey at the start of the show, who you could kind of qualify being from Wexford, but not really. We have a born and bred hurling man from North County Tipperary, Niall McIntyre. Tell us your credentials, Niall.
Jeez, buddy, you're putting me under a lot of pressure there straight away now. Well, yeah, I suppose I'm a hurler. That should be half the battle anyway. Yeah, as you said, I'm from Lura in North Tipperary. And while we play a bit of football, maybe a bit too much football, we're mad into hurling in Lura. And I'm currently playing with the senior team. We're in the Senior B Championship in Tipperary. We're not going great this year, but I suppose you're always hoping for the best and hoping things will turn around.
So you've gone from losing a County B County Final, the B Championship, the old intermediate. You went from losing that final last year to potentially being in a relegation final this year.
Well, we're a bit away from the relegation final. We won't think of that yet now. But yeah, we lost the county final to Mullinahone. That would be Owen Kelly's club last year, and he scored 2-5 against us. Really, like, beat us on the day. But yeah, we're just struggling a little bit this year. But we've a game this weekend, so hoping to get the best and hoping to get back on track this weekend. Yeah.
Well, it's obviously the great Bonner Mars club. So without Bonner, he keeps getting injured. Like, what club at senior B level is going to, you know, survive without, well, not survive, but go well without the likes of Bonner?
Yeah, well, Bonner, like, was a huge reason why we got to the county final last year. Like, he was brilliant for us in the half forward line. And, like, obviously a player like that, as you said, is going to be a huge loss for us. And, like, I suppose Bonner, like, he's really put us on the map as a club. Like, when people ask you where you're from, you say you're from Lura. Most people don't have a clue, and you say Bonner Maher then, and the conversation starts, kind of. But, like, I'm lucky enough to have played with Bonner for the last 4 years, and he's just a brilliant teammate and a real, like, he came back from the cruise ship before that county final, and he's another injury now, but there's no better man to get back from there again.
Yeah, well, listen, fingers crossed he does get back. Lee Costello, your club career is a very interesting one. So let me get this right. This could be a pub quiz. You're a Tyrone man who played his club football in Derry, and you're currently playing for an Antrim club in the Down Championship. You might explain that to us.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I'm sort of like the tart of GAA club football. I'm from Tyrone, but I'm a little village just outside Cookstown, so it is Tyrone, but it would be a unionist sort of area, so we have to share a parish with our neighbouring village, and that village happens to be in Derry, because in the north if you drive in a straight lane, you know, you'll go Tyrone, Derry. Especially in Mid Ulster. But so they have the Gaelic pitch, so that's where I ended up playing my football. But I'm a proud Tyrone man, my family's Tyrone, and playing for money more, and I know my Derry football better maybe in club. But yeah, and at the minute I'm in Belfast and I live in County Antrim, but my club is the new East Belfast GAA team and they play in County Down. So yeah, I like to get around.
Jeez, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Come here, tell me, how's East Belfast going? Like, I mean, have you won a few games? What level did you go in the Down Championship?
Yeah, so we went into junior. You have to start from the bottom. We had a tough start last year, 2020. We were just a ragtag of strangers all thrown into the championship. You know, we didn't get a win, but we've been much better this time around. We've got a good few wins in the league. And we just won our first ever championship match last Saturday against Agadirg. So yeah, I mean, we're flying now, and it's a great thing to be a part of.
So are you like when you're trying to recruit players for East Belfast? I'm trying to think it's a little bit like an American club. Do you find lads who are in college in Belfast to say, here, look, do you want to transfer to us? How do you increase your numbers, or do they contact you?
Oh, they contact us. We have no shortage of numbers. We have three teams at the minute, and like an A team, a B team, and a C team. I think it's 140 registered players, and that's just the men's. Not counting the hurlers, not counting the commoves, and then there's the ladies footballers as well. People have just bought behind the idea, the whole cross-community aspect. There hasn't been a Gaelic team in East Belfast since the 50s, and obviously, it too, being like in a unionist background and everything, you know, there's it's a strange enough thing. Like, and there's an allure there to be a part of it, but we're full of blow-ins, really, by and large. A load of people who moved to Belfast for work and university and can't really commit to like travelling home, back to their clubs and stuff. So we're just at their back door, and they come to us, and now we're all part of this thing.
Very good, very good. So come here. There's loads of news to get through. I don't think we'll get through it all. We'll cover some of it on Thursday as well. A couple of county champions crowned yesterday. Niall, I'll start with you. Rapparees won their first since 1978. Goals win games, as they say. 618 to 117. 5,000 spectators there, which is a nice change from last year. Deserved winners. Like, I mean, I was watching this and it was like it was over as a contest when all those goals started going in.
Yeah, like before the game, Willie, I was kind of really looking forward to this one. Two new teams that we hadn't seen before in Wexford. And like, I thought it was going to be tight, especially when St Anne's were there twice in the last 5 years.
It was tight till the first water break.
It was tight, yeah, and they looked fairly evenly matched. But as soon as Rapparees got the goals, they settled into it, and you could see the kind of confidence draining away from the Anne's boys. But the whole way through the game, the Rapparees forwards, I just thought the three inside men were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
Ushin Pepper, and then there was Lenny Connolly, and of course Ricky Fox. Ricky Fox was. He had an unbelievable game. I think he only scored 1-2, but he could have scored about 1-5. He was brilliant throwing the ball off, always passing, always looking for the right pass. And as we watched earlier this morning, Willie, he was a brilliant footballer too. Yeah. And he played for Wexford Utes in his day. So he could be a man for Dara Egan to be looking at for the Wexford senior hurling team.
He's a bit of an all-rounder. They're actually current football champions as well. So the whole boat, they're into football this year. I don't know about you, Lee, but I was watching this and we mentioned Lenny Connolly scoring 2-1. He was wearing number 16 and it was literally hurting my eyes to see a sub goalkeeper playing corner forward scoring 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange thing. It draws the eye as well. It's the only thing you can watch. So it's a good thing he had a good game, because he's the only one anyone would be watching, especially if you were in neutral. I remember Monaghan years ago, they had a number 1 out playing outfield, whatever way the championship numbers had arranged themselves. And it's just... it's a strange sight, all right.
Yeah, it annoyed me. I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I was freezing the television to take a picture to give out about it. I didn't end up doing it anyway. So nice to see Kevin Foley and Liam Ryan getting their county championship medal. Alan Tobin got man of the match. His goal was sensational, Niall. Like, I mean, he barely swung at it and it rocketed into the corner of the net. He's a footballer. He's a serious option for Wexford on that form.
Yeah, like the goal was one that stood out, but like even his point just before that, he was running straight down the line, and it was similar to the goal in that when you know you have a man coming behind you, it's a difficult shot to take on because you kind of sense the hook coming in.
Yeah.
But he like, and usually you might throw like a little shimmy to kind of try and get out of there, but he just stayed going straight. He had enough pace, I suppose, to stay going. And the little swing, it was a tiny little swing,
just but tapped it.
Straight into the roof of the net, like, and... Yeah, he was brilliant. Just lots of energy around midfield, and a Wexford footballer, and definitely another man they could be looking at for the hurlers too.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Mount Leinster Rangers beat St Mullins fairly convincingly. That's back-to-back titles. Mount Leinster Rangers players were holding up 10. They won 10 titles in 15 years. They were holding up the 10 fingers. You can only do that if you win 10 in a row. It's completely wrong. I've seen these pictures going around, but it's all about the two Nolans. They scored, I think Mount Leinster Rangers scored 17 from play. Niall, in the first half, they scored 10 of them, 5 each. They shared it fairly
Yeah, the Nolan well. Brothers. I think Chris is the oldest brother, but he's been a key man for Carlo in the last few years as well, like between himself and Marty Kavanagh. And I think they were kind of building it up as a bit of a shootout between the two boys in the final, but it never really materialised. Mount Leinster Rangers were just the stronger from the word go. And yeah, the two Nolan boys, 10 points play in the first half, like that's good going for the two brothers inside.
There's no doubt about that. And one final county champion. There was a bit of drama in this one. John Myler manages Kilmiley.
You got it right earlier this morning, Willie.
It's not my first club pronunciation I'm going to get wrong, but this was a last minute goal. This is heartbreaking. St Brendan's led until the 59th minute and Maurice O'Connor got a match winning goal.
Yeah, I just seen a few of the highlights there, and Maurice O'Connor, it was the two O'Connors that seemed to be the key men for Kilmiley. It was Paddy O'Connor in midfield, he was brilliant, and Maurice was kind of buzzing around all day, similar to Ricky Fox in that he was throwing the ball around, wasn't selfish, and he got his reward with the last minute goal, and it was a great win for them. I seen John Myler was interviewed after the game, and you could just see the hair was nearly still standing on the back of his neck, like, and the passion he has for Kerry Hurling. I know he was their manager back in the day, but like he's been brilliant, kind of a servant and I suppose an ambassador for Kerry Hurling in that way. Like,
yeah, no, he definitely has. One other big, we're not going to spend too much time because we're only a county final for those three counties. Another big bit of news though, Lee, is that Moorfield have been knocked out in Kildare. Huge news for this. It was a last minute goal as well. So like, I mean, they've been leading for most of the game. Finished 1-11 to 1-9, and you know, Ronan Sweeney's their manager. He's got inter-county experience with Sligo and Niall Carew, and he went back to his club as a club legend, and they lost the county final last year to a tie, and now they're out really early in the championship. And you know, like, I mean, it hasn't exactly gone according to plan for him.
No, not at all. I mean, it was heartbreaking stuff too. Even the goal itself, it was from a free kick, and they just do what you do when you need a goal, to put it into the mixer. And it couldn't have worked out better for them. It was probably poor defending. The ball broke off the hand, fell to the forward, and he didn't even think about it. He just buried it in the net, no questions asked. And the footage of the goal I saw was from someone recording it on a phone, and their own commentary on it was just hilarious. They were like, oh my God, it's actually in. And they were running about and jumping up and down. So it really captured it beautifully. But it was a really big shock, yeah. And I mean, heartbreaking stuff. You have to feel for them, but it was poor defended.
Yeah, Moorfield have been the dominant club, as we know, in Kildare for the last 10 years. But Keane and Aine O'Connor, who are two very big players for them for the last 5 or 6 years, they've gone back to Kerry, as we know, and their father has gone back to Kerry too. We don't know if he has the job yet. We might get to that in a little bit of a minute. But the intercounty boys have been running amok in the club football and hurling. So we've Austin Gleeson scoring 2-4. Robbie O'Flynn scored 3-3. Aaron Zone were down, I think they're down 9 points at half time to St Finbarr's. He pulled it out of the bag. Shane Kingston scored 14. Patrick Curran 2-10. Niall McNamee got 3-8 for Roe against Forban. And Forban are a big club. I'm thinking of you two lowly club hurlers and footballers, lads, because I have to say it, I'm obviously ex-intercounty player, so I don't know any about it. What, have you ever marked an intercounty player, Niall, let's start with you, coming back from intercounty duty? You've been following him all summer and now you're marking him.
Well, I only have to go back 2 weeks ago, Willie. We played St Mary's of Clonmel in the first round of the championship, and I suppose like I was surprised initially that Seamus Kennedy wasn't hurling like on the starting team for Tipperary this year, but against Lura he was definitely out like a man that was out to prove a point. And he started off in the first half, he was full forward and he was kind of drifting out the field. So he played well in the first half. In the second half, we said we'll put a man to man mark him, and I was given that job. And while he had a good first half, he had a lot better second half when I was running after him. But like, it was just, so I was going out in the second half, and your attitude is like, I'm just going to follow this lad anywhere he goes. Like, and you think you're doing fairly well, like following him everywhere, but there's always a split second where you just, you know, whether you're going for a ball, you think you're going to win a ball here, and he's just gone, like, and that's kind of I suppose, the class of the intercounty hurler. And I think he picked me for 3 points there. But anytime you kind of just lost your focus, he was kind of sneaking off and he'd give a perfect pass, something like that. Like, he's a former Tipperary footballer as well and just a very clever player. And the form he's shown, he was brilliant the last day in the club too. So I'd be surprised if he's not a key man for Tip next year too.
But I've a problem with that in hurling. I've said it on the hurling show loads of times, in that man-marking in hurling, in football, man-marking involves accepting that you might never hold a ball in your hand. Hurlers don't like to accept that, don't they not? You still want to hurl a little bit of ball yourself, so you will take your eyes off them. And that's the reality of hurling has to catch up, and cornerbacks in hurling have to understand, you're man-marking him. Don't attack any balls now.
I don't think I'll ever be given a man-marking job for Laura again.
We'll leave it out. Lee, what about you? Have you ever had the task of marking an intercounty player coming back and are flying it when they come back from the intercounty duty?
I always remember a few years ago, so playing for Moneymore in the Derry Intermediate League, Endolin, he was playing for Greenlock.
Oh, yeah.
And he was coming back. And obviously beforehand, the whole talk was about stopping him and how we can nullify him as best as we can. And when you think of Endolin, you think of someone who's like really pacey, really skillful, even dare I say like a flair player. But what I couldn't get over was the physicality of him and the fact he was throwing elbows, standing on toes, just everything from the off. And I suppose the mentality behind that is, we're in a changing room talking about him being, how do we nullify their best player? He must know that that's obviously what we're going to be doing. So he comes in trying to lay down a marker earlier himself. So I find, you know, when county players come back into the league form or whatever, they need to show straight away they're not going to be pushed after or pushed around, and don't try to get physical with me and just let me play my football or I'll be swinging back. And that was very much the case. And yeah, he won that one, yeah.
He's fast, Lindo, isn't he?
He's flying, absolutely flying. I remember, I'll give him a shout out, Warren McCloy, he'd been known for pace back in the day, definitely not now, but we thought, I don't care how good a footballer he is, there's no way he's faster than Warren, and he was so much faster. It was incredible, like watching him go. He's just as fast with the ball than without it, you know, and it's always an incredible thing to watch. It's almost like he's gliding. It's really, really hard to stop.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So a bit of intercounty news, lads. So Kerry are hunting for a new manager. We have some reappointments, we have some new appointments, and we have some hunt for a new manager. We have a lot of counties actually hunting for a new manager, but Kerry have probably the most kind of eye-catching, because Peter Keane, who saw out his 3-year term, and he's been told he has to reapply for it, Lee. I don't know, is it disrespectful to Peter Keane? Would you not just tell... I think it's very obvious he's getting the bullet. And if Peter Keane needs to just say to them, here, look, you either want me to stay or you don't want me to stay, but asking me to reapply when you're looking for better candidates than me, I don't know. It's a little bit embarrassing for him, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing stinks, to be honest. And even when they released it in social media, it was like 10 o'clock on Twitter. They were sort of hoping the statement would fly under the radar, I think. But no, I mean, Peter Keane has to be, I'm afraid he's a dead man walking at this stage, because like they're basically telling him, we're looking for better. And say he does reapply and he does get the job. Like, what are they saying there then? You know, they're saying that, you know, we don't think you can be the best man for the job, but you're the best of a current bad bunch. So go on and have a rattle, which, you know, the Kerry job's hard enough. There's so much pressure in it. So to go in there actively without the backing of your county board and for it to be public to the rest of the county and the rest of the country, like it doesn't make any sense, to be honest. I think they've handled it really, really poorly. It's not even the fact that it's like, you know, there's a right way to do things, and the lack of transparency is just incredible. They should have just released the statement if they don't want them, thanking him for, you know, all the work he's put in, the Munster title and stuff like that, and just make it clean. You know, it's still not nice, but at least it's transparent, and we know where we stand, and he knows where he stands, and Kerry fans know where they stand.
Yeah, the only hope Peter Keane has now, if he sacks his entire backroom team, kind of shifts the blame onto them and goes, look, I'll put together a better team. That's the only way he can potentially beat Jack O'Connor, and there's talk of Seamus Moynihan in with Donny Buckley, which, like, for me, that's the winner right there.
Yeah, like, as soon as you saw that they were looking for someone new, you just think that the man that's there now, he won't be staying. Like, and that was my opinion the minute I saw that from Peter Keane. Like,
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Brian Cody staying 24th year. Owen Murphy, his whole backroom team is staying. James McGarry, Martin Comerford, Conor Phelan, they're staying on as selectors and coaches and everything that they're doing. Owen Murphy was interviewed. I don't know whether I'm wasting my time reading out a current player who Brian Cody is picking. This is his, I don't know any different than Brian. He's been a great servant to Kilkenny hurling, and I think, yeah, we certainly wouldn't begrudge him another couple of years. I don't see any issue with Brian. I'm quite happy with it. Obviously, I'm being picked. It would be a different story if I'm on the bench next year. Look, we're just here to play games. At the end of the day, we're being coached, we're being well looked after, and there are no complaints with the county board or anything like that. So, like, I mean, I was kind of talking last year, Niall, about Brian Cody. You know, it was coming on the back of the humiliation against Waterford, you know, and kind of beaten well by Galway in that Leinster final until a late rally. You know, you thought Galway were the better team and you're thinking, is it time for change? I'm less on that kind of side of it now. They're double Leinster champions. You have Christy Heffernan, the Irish Examiner. I don't know how the Irish Examiner find these lads giving out about Cody. He's giving out saying, why did DJ Carey walk away? Like, I mean, is this complete and utter arrogance from Kilkenny to think they're double Leinster champions? They have a manager that's won them 11 All-Irelands. And there's people who want them to go.
Yeah, I was nearly the opposite to you, Wooly, in that after the Waterford game last year, I kind of thought it was just a complete freak that Kilkenny were beaten. Like, Waterford just, they were unbelievable in that second half last year and just sort of took over the game or whatever. But this year I thought it was sort of just similar. Kilkenny didn't really perform in the semi-final.
In the second half, probably.
In the second half of the semi-final, exactly, against Cork. And I suppose that's where the likes of Christy Heffernan, where he's getting that opinion from. But still, like Kilkenny, as you said, they're double Leinster champions. They were in the, they won the league back in 2019, and they're still there, thereabouts. They obviously don't have the, like, the talent that they had back when they were winning all these All-Ireland. So maybe it is a little bit of arrogance, but I think it's just that display they gave against Limerick in 2019, like, that was the best display I'd say any team have put in apart from Limerick in the last 3 years. Like,
yeah.
And I suppose they're just, like, Cody definitely deserves another shot at Limerick, because I think if Kilkenny were to beat Limerick, I think that would really, like, they'd be beating these teams like Cork. I think that would really give them the confidence that they need. And I know Limerick have improved since then, but Kilkenny, like, they're not going too badly, like.
No, they're not going too badly at all. What's your take on that, Lee? Like, I mean, 11 All-Irelands, 24 years in charge. I think he's equaled Sean Boylan's record. Do you need a new voice at that stage? Or, like, I mean, I don't think they can ever get rid of Brian Cody. Is it Brian Cody? You know, it's Brian Cody's decision maybe to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reward for success should be longevity, you know. I mean, and I think he's earned that, to be fair. We were in a sort of a similar situation with Tyrone and Mickey Hart, but, like, Mickey Hart wasn't even as successful as that. And he got nearly 20 years or just 20 years. And in the end, you know, they just let his contract run out and they didn't extend it. But Kilkenny fans, I suppose, it's whether or not they accepted that they are in a transition sort of period. And now that they're at least seeing trophies, like you were saying, I think that Kilkenny are doing okay. I mean, they were very, I know it was a late goal against Cork, but they were so competitive all the way throughout. And then they lost an extra time. It was a semi-final. Like, they weren't a million miles away.
No. Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I don't know what they want. As far as I'm concerned, nobody can get near Limerick. So what do you want? Are Leinster titles and All-Ireland semi-finals? You know, like, I mean, for me, that's as far as Kilkenny can go, no matter who's over them. So it'll be interesting to see how they go this year. Micheál Donoghue is the favourite to get the Galway job, Niall. Like, I mean, Davy Fitz is in for a tour. He's distanced himself. He said he hasn't heard anything, right? But his name is in the mix. Now, whether he's telling the truth or not, but he seems to be standing aside and letting Micheál Donoghue, if he wants it, take it. Apparently, Micheál Donoghue has mended bridges with whatever county board officials, you know, that he fell out with. You made an interesting point on Sports Show about this, is that even when Galway won the All-Ireland 2017, that Galway team at that level cannot beat Limerick in 2021. They're not, that won't beat Limerick. So Galway in 22, you said, are without Joe Canning and a whole load of other players will be 5 years older than 2017. You're making the argument for Davy Fitz. What Galway need is something completely new rather than Micheál Donoghue, you know, and that 2017 style. Now, maybe Micheál Donoghue will come with something new.
Yeah, well, while Galway won the All-Ireland 2017, Wooly, I'd nearly argue that their best year was 2018. They were brilliant in those two games against Clare. And then in the final against Limerick, they played okay, but they weren't able to beat Limerick in 2018. And it's 4 years on from that now. And There's not too many. I know Galway have had a few successful minor teams, but not too many of them have come on to the team and really like starred like or made a name for themselves. So I think like Micheál Donoghue, like the word is the people from Galway, like I'm only over the border, Pertumna is right beside me, and the majority of them seem to want Micheál Donoghue, and he seems to be the man. So it's his job if he wants it. Like, but right. I just think that Davy Fitz, like I wrote that article the other day, and hard as it is to believe, like I've never got as much texts or people tagging me on Twitter. It's just that Davy Fitz is kind of, he's a very divisive figure, like, yeah. And I don't think a lot of people from Galway don't really seem to want him.
Why is that? Is it like, I mean, well, there's probably a list of reasons, if we're being honest. Like, is it the game plan? They don't want the sweeper. They don't like the short pass and running game. Is it the drama Davy brings? Is it the fact that Galway mightn't be able to afford him? Let's call a spade here.
Yeah, I'd say it's a mix between the sort of drama and maybe the game plan. Maybe, like, Davy has always managed sort of underdog counties. Like, yeah. Like it started off with Waterford, did well with them, and then it was Clare and Wexford. Like, they've never really been, I suppose, the traditional.
And LIT
giants.
Against UL. Would
yeah,
that
like he's. And maybe they sort of think they're above sort of that Davy Fitz kind of underdog thing, if you get me, like. But yeah. I just think Davy, the reason why I think he'd be a good man is because he always seems to, like, whenever he starts off with a team, he seems to get a bounce with them. He's good to shake things up. He has no problem dropping like a big name, like as he did in Waterford. Ken McGrath and Dan Shanahan kind of struggled with him, like he eventually kind of froze them out a small bit, and maybe that is like what Galway need to trust some of these younger players that like have been winning a few championships. And as well as that, like I kind of think the Davy style of play, I know Wexford struggled with it last year, especially in that game against Clare, it kind of broke down, but I think Galway have like brilliant hurlers. I think of the likes of Cathal Mannion, Joseph Cooney, Conor Whelan. I think these boys would completely thrive in that sort of, just that game plan that uses your speed of wrist, just quick passes, everything. And I think they'd, I just think it would go well, but my Galway friends don't seem to think so.
Yeah, who would have thought it, Lee? People don't want Davy Fitz.
I know, I mean, as a neutral, I want to see Davy Fitz back in the game because he's just so entertaining. And then as a journalist, I want him back in the game because there's always something to write about, you know? It's just story after story with him. But, I mean, like, he is a spark. If he was to get the job, he'll either light a flame, you know, which they can build on, or he'll light a full fire and burn the whole house down. But, I mean, one thing's for sure, like, you want to see it. Is maybe Galway fans, that's what they're afraid of, and they're being a bit cautious, obviously. But I certainly want to see Davy Fitz back in the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Micheál Donoghue, no disrespect to him, he's more of an uninspiring choice, really. Somebody go back in that's been there before. You know, it's definitely interesting. Davy Fitz was saying that he's been involved in the game for 34 years, 18 as a player and 14 as a manager. And then he says a break might do me the world of good. And he's manager of Six Mile Bridge or coach of them. Like, he's not taking a break at all. Like, I mean, talk about being addicted to Gaelic Grahams. Oh, new manager in Tipperary, Colin Bonner. Let's be honest, this fella came out of nowhere, Colin Bonner. I like Colin Bonner. Colin Bonner was managing Ballyhale Shamrocks when I did a GA Jackass down there, and he was very nice to me and accommodating and allowed this mess and go on. I think it was before a county final we did it. So he's a very relaxed man, probably a little bit old school, would that be fair to say? It's done good things with Carlo, but it's a much lower level. Liam Cahill turned it down. Derry Egan went to Wexford. He obviously got a much better package going to them. And Colin Bonner, you talk about Brendan Cummins. Colin Bonner came out of nowhere, really, did he?
He did seem to come from nowhere, because as things were going, it seemed it was a two-horse race between William Maher and Brendan Cummins, and Colin Bonner came in then to take it. But to be honest, I just kind of think that Colin Bonner is nearly long overdue the tip job, to be honest. Like, I know he was in there when Liam Sheedy came back the last time, but like he's been around for a long time. He managed Waterford IT to 6 Fitzgibbon Cup wins, like, and he was there when the Tip Camogie team won in All-Ireland. As you said, he was with Ballyhale. Like, that's a brilliant CV. And when Carlo, I know it's a lower level, but when Carlo were hurling at their best, like when they were going well, he was the manager. And as you said, a relaxed manager. I was talking to one of the boys from the club who played under Colin Bonner at Waterford IT, and it was their best Fitzgibbon season they had. And he just said that he was, do you know, college hurling, it's kind of, you want to, it's not the be all and end all. Like, you want to enjoy yourself. And he said that Colin Bonner was very accommodating for that kind of thing. Like, when they were coming home, they might be having a few cans in the bus, and Colin Bonner like was in the middle of them having the crack, and they all just really respected him and hurled for him too. Owen Murphy was on the team that year, and they got to the semi-final. They won the following year. But I think a manager like that is the type of manager that players will hurl for, like.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's no doubt you have to let the college boys have a few cans or you won't be a very popular manager. It'd be interesting to see how he gets on. The big thing with these managers now is who he gets in as coach. You know, who he gets in as his backroom team. They're probably just as important now as the actual manager himself. So Special Congress has been put back until the 23rd of October. I think that's to accommodate maybe people being able to go. Aren't all the restrictions kind of being lifted on October 22nd? I'm thinking maybe it was supposed to be on this Saturday. I'm glad it's not, because now it's going to give the championship structure, which is massive, 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 enough time to be kind of debated. The GPA have come in backing the league-based championship. And it's very, very important to stress league-based championship. It's not the league. It's a championship. It's a league championship. So it's a completely different thing. So the GPA are coming in behind that. I'm absolutely delighted with that because obviously this league championship is my restructure idea. I will give anyone €100 if they can find anyone who has suggested this before me. It won't happen because it was me who suggested it. Jim McGuinness, my buddy, old buddy, has been writing in the Irish Times, and the article really, really annoyed me, I have to say. Like, he's starting to get on my nerves a little bit, Jim. So he doesn't like my idea. He doesn't like my idea, which is obviously the reason I'm getting a little bit pissed off with him. So he makes an argument for keeping the provincial championships based on nothing, only tradition. Now, Lee, I'm sure you'll have a similar. You Ulster people are very, very, you know, pro your Ulster championship, and you're probably right because it's the only functioning one. You know, like, I mean, it's the most competitive one, and it's getting more competitive. So there's a huge argument for Ulster people say we want to keep it, but the other three, Ulster doesn't run the whole, you know, the whole GEA. So basically, this league-based championship, it doesn't get rid of the provincials; it separates them from the All-Ireland knockout series, right? And instead of the provincials feeding into the All-Ireland knockout series, the league feeds into the All-Ireland knockout series. So each county has seven championship games in the four divisions against teams of their own level. So you can, like, I mean, it's seven championship games that you have a very good chance of winning the majority, you know, the majority of them. Most teams will say, we can do it. The four teams will come out of division one, two out of two, one out of three and one out of four, and they feed into the All-Ireland quarterfinals. So McGuinness's argument here is it completely demeans and undermines the integrity of the localised elements of the All-Ireland, which have over 130 years of tradition and stories behind them. You know, that's grand. So he says there's not as many stories about them now in a lot of the provinces because Leinster's a dead duck, Munster's a dead duck, Connacht, two out of the five teams get terrible pastings. So it's a three horse race. And let's be honest, Mayo are ahead of the other two. So, like, I mean, other than Ulster, you know, what tradition is there now? Why are we looking back? Anyways, here's a quote from him. You have to ask, what are we replacing it with? What are we saying suddenly? With this proposal is that the league matters more to the GAA than the championship. On what grounds has this been decided? So he's saying that the league matters more to the GAA than the championship. But it's like he's completely missing the point. It's not the league as it was. The league will be the championship. You've seven championship games to feed into All-Ireland quarterfinals. It's not the league as it used to be, played in February and March as a secondary warm-up competition. This is the league championship. It is the championship. It's just run off on a league basis. Every one of those seven games is going to be a huge championship game for every one of the counties. I can't see any argument against it. He goes on and then says, my fear is that this will be passed. There's a kind of mindless sense that change is needed and it will have major repercussions. The league was always preparation for the championship. Again, Jim, it's not the league. This is the league in June, July and August or May, June, July or even May and June to feed into the knockout series in August or whatever the dates will be. It will be those league games played in the championship time in the summer. So the league will be the championship. I don't think he understands it. He wrote a really long article. Like, I mean, the league was always the secondary competition played in very, very poor conditions. And rightly so, it was kind of a warm-up competition. He's concerned that the provincials will become the warm-up for this, which might actually happen. But the provincials, other than Ulster, Lee, I'll let you have you come in here now because I'm probably starting to annoy you now. The provincials, being, you know, three of the four are completely broken. And if you're to actually run further, Antrim, Fermanagh and Down have taken terrible pastings in Ulster. So, like, you're talking about six counties wanting, and Jimmy being from one of them, you know, maybe wanting things not to change.
Yeah, I think that is his real issue here. Ulster Championship, it's really healthy at the minute, you know, with some unbelievable games like Monaghan and Armagh was such a thriller. And then Tyrone's run there.
Haven't said Jim didn't like that match too much. There was too many scores.
No, he didn't, that's right. He's a problem with high scoring games as well, so we need to fix that, definitely. But no, I think, you know, when you write these ridiculously long articles and the point sort of, it's lost in it nearly. Bottom line, what he's really saying is, I don't want to lose the Ulster Championship. But he knows he can't say that to everybody because it's not fair in the other provinces where there are championships. I mean, they're, like you said, they're dead ducks. But he can't pin that to him because we're such a minority. So he's disguising it under all these, like, philosophies of tradition and history and 130 years and then talking about the atmosphere. I mean, like, I think you lose your point a little bit when you just start, like, have these people ever been to, like, Killarney and stuff on Championship Day and whatever else? I mean, like, he's not actually saying anything, if you know what I mean. There's no actual... I don't actually hear his solution either. And then he does go on to justify that, like, yeah, teams are getting pastings and there is change needed, but I don't really hear his answer. So it is very confusing. You want Ulster, like, the joy we have watching Ulster teams play against each other, it's because you're watching the best be the best. There's so many Division 1 teams in Ulster.
Yeah.
So if we could see that around the, you know, in a bigger scale, and teams of similar level playing against each other, you'll see competitive games. Competitive games leads to entertainment, and then entertainment leads to people wanting to join the GAA, and then it just progresses like that. And there's a ladder as well to claim, you know, like, one year you're winning one division. Like, even if you look at the ladies' football, you know, look at me, they were an intermediate team, and now they're, you know, we won the full All-Ireland and stuff, you know, because they had that opportunity to climb a ladder. I know this is a different structure still, but I'm just saying that, like, just because you're stuck in one division for a little while, it doesn't mean it's forever. Whereas I just think if you're in the current situation, if you're at the bottom of the pile, it's nearly impossible to claim.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. Like, I mean, the Ulster Championship will still be there. He's saying the prestige, you know, will be affected by it not being linked to the All-Ireland. But, like, I remember McKenna Cup games in January getting 18,000 when Armagh and Tyrone were kind of at a big rivalry. Ulster fans are fanatical. And you're telling me, after not having an inter-county game from the previous August All-Ireland, that the Ulster Championship starts in maybe March, the start of March, that those grounds won't be packed out and teams won't want to win the Ulster Championship? Like, I mean, I think it's madness to think that if the Ulster Championship is as important as everyone in Ulster says it is, what's the big problem here? Of course, and, like...
Well, he sort of undermines his own point by saying that, because he talks about tradition and people love Ulster football and Ulster, they love going to the Championship and watching the Tyrone v Armagh games. So if that platform's still there, why is he saying that people won't go to it? You know, the opportunity isn't taken away. The trophy will still be the same. You'll still get your medal. You know, in Ulster, we'll know what it means. The players will know what it means. Like, I don't think anyone's going to treat that. Like, I'm not saying it's not. Obviously, this new league championship format, that'll be the be-all and end-all. But if that's the only football being played at that time in March, they're going to take it seriously. Of course they are.
Yeah, of course you have to, because you have to warm up to the big competition, you know, the All-Ireland series. And, like, you're not going to be trying too many lads out in an Ulster Championship. There's two cups up for offer starting with this new proposal if it goes through. An Ulster, a provincial championship, and an All-Ireland championship. It's the same as what's there already. So do you have a chance of winning something? Like, there's teams celebrate winning the early January cup competition. You have a chance of winning a provincial title or an All-Ireland. You know, like, I mean, maybe you make an argument to say that Dublin might, you know, because Leinster Championship is so easy for them now, that Dublin mightn't take that so seriously. I don't think any team in Ulster, I think that pride of winning an Ulster Championship will always be there.
Yeah, well, I don't want to give you a big head, Woolly, but I think the idea in general of the teams having more championship games in terms of the league, like, is a lot better, like, because the way it was, I know it was because of COVID, it was only a straight knockout, but, like, to only have two championship games in general is a tough kind of a thing anyway. So I think the league sort of championship format, it would be the way forward.
Yeah, he goes on to say, I have a couple more issues to pick up with him. Lee, the point you made, he says, the Ulster Championship has been fashioned as preparation for the league. Again, it's not the league, Jim. It's not the league. It's the championship. The Connacht final is the warm-up for the league. Again, Jim, it's not the league, it's the league championship. I sometimes wonder if the people behind these ideas, that's me, have actually gone to Castlebar or gone to Killarney or gone to Clonus. The atmosphere on these days isn't fabricated or invented. I've been to all those. I've been to every one of them. Killarney last year wasn't too good, or this year when, wasn't too good when Kerry were spanking Cork by 20-odd points. Like the Ulster or the Connacht final was won by 8 points. Or was it 2-14 to 2-8? 6 points. Like, I mean, the Ulster Championship is the only functioning one. Like, Leinster Championship is gone. All these things are a fact. And he has no argument against this league-based championship other than calling it the league and trying to run it down based on it being a league that we're used to now, which it's not. He has that point completely wrong. And then he's won two more points that I need to pull him up on. He goes on to criticise the All-Ireland quarterfinals. He says, well, one team out of Division 3, one team out of Division 4 will feed into the All-Ireland quarterfinals. He says, well, they'll be hammerings. So if we're trying to get rid of hammerings by you know, we will see hammerings. They could be hammerings. Those two teams will most likely play the top two in Division 2 in preliminary All-Ireland quarterfinals, right? They could get hammerings. But is a those two teams will have been promoted number one out of Division 4, out of Division 3. They'll have played 7 championship games. Mm. They'll now get a prestigious All-Ireland quarterfinal. If they take a hammering, they now see what level they need to get to Division 2. They've had an incredibly positive year. And that's against a Sligo or a Leitrim getting absolutely hammered by Mayo in the provincial championship and going into a qualifier and maybe getting beaten. Like, I mean, there's no comparison. One gets 7 championship games before they're... Before, and who's to say a Division 3 team's going to get a hammering off a Division 2 team? I don't see that happening. Maybe not even Division 4, depending on who they play. So that is a ridiculous argument as well. Really, I swear, I wrote this and I read this and I was just getting so annoyed that this was even... that he'd even put this into print. Then the last bit I wanted to pull him up on was he suggested that teams will stay in Division 2 on purpose to have an easier chance of the quarterfinals. And this is something I had a bit of an argument with Conan that worked on the show here with us before about. He suggested the same thing. So here it goes. What Division 2 team has ever won the All-Ireland, even in hurling or in football? You have to, every manager tells you, you have to be playing the top teams on a consistent basis. Armagh were desperate to get out of Division 2. Mayo want to get back out of it again. Cork are desperate to get out of Division 2 to get up to Division 1. You play the top teams every week or you don't get used to playing them. So for Jim to say that the top teams will decide to go into Division 2, have handy games just to get into a quarter final, and then if they get beaten by one of the big teams, they say, oh, Jim, sure, we weren't playing top class opposition the whole, you know. I would call it, Lee, a conspiracy theory. I don't know what you make of that.
Yeah, I mean, like, the idea is that this is a proposal. It's easy to poke holes in it because we haven't seen it yet. I mean, so it's just so easy to ask loads of questions and then not give any solutions and just make it look really chaotic. I mean, it was an easy article to write and to throw things into disarray and make it look like it's incredibly unorganized or whatever. But, it's the hammerings thing in particular for me. It doesn't make any sense. But it's like we get like one game this year and it was a pasting and then that's it, season over in terms of the championship.
Yeah.
You know, but like if you play your 7 games and you get to the quarterfinal, then you've earned that quarterfinal. So you've built momentum. You know, you've solved things. Like look at Tyrone this year, obviously at a higher scale, but like the team from the first round is so different to the team that's finished. You're able to tinker, you're able to play with things, try things out and evolve as a squad, and the team bonds together. The manager gets to know his players better. It even gives managers a better chance too, because you know, they get longer technically, you know, to work with the team and really implement the sort of tactics and stuff and the style of play that they want to bring in. So then we'll see the best of these teams when they do reach the quarterfinal. I think quarterfinal, Croke Park, that's when you want to put on display and showcase everything you've been working on all year. And it's not like you're there because of a lucky draw or whatever, you know, you had to earn it.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand that at all. I mean, the hammering situation. And then if you get hammered in Croke Park after having a pretty decent season, like, at least it was a day out for them and they got to enjoy a season and, you know, kids got to go to more than one game. It just makes sense. And for the county player itself, like, I know, you know, you're bound to be more interested in playing for your county knowing that you're guaranteed that amount of championship games rather than maybe just give everything, spend your whole January, February, March working so hard in the winter and stuff, playing one game, getting hammered and then being told that you're crap. And having to do that again next year.
Yeah, yeah. 7 winnable championship games is the big one. And then the prestige of an All-Ireland quarter final for the fans and for the players.
Angry about the article. I'm surprised you didn't tweet about it.
I had it written, but it was too much to put in. I would have had to do a thread.
This is the forum.
I'm not into threads. I said, I may leave this for tomorrow. I'm too angry and I can't fit this into the characters. That's why I didn't tweet about it. But don't worry, I had the article pasted into the actual box. What's the one finish up on? Obviously, we actually had to miss out on a few talking points, lads, because we have to get to Niall Morgan. Who's waiting by. The sympathies to Anto Finnegan, lads, who died at the age of 48. He's former Antrim footballer, played cornerback. He had motor neurons disease, and most people will know him. He did a lot of campaigning for motor neurons disease and set up a charity, Deter MND. Huge amount of tributes have come in from the Dublin footballers, Brian Fenton, Philly McMahon, lots of other ones. He set up a charity match between the Dublin footballers and Ulster, I'm fairly sure. Tributes from Paddy Bradley, Joe Brolly, who Anto would have marked. My career would have, crossed across Anto's. I wouldn't be that much younger than him. Very good, tenacious cornerback, and deepest sympathies from everyone here on the show to his family and friends. It's a tragic loss, and there's nobody that you'd ever meet or I've ever heard of that would say a bad word about Anto Finnegan. Very inspirational character, and as I said, our deepest sympathies with his family. We'll leave it there, lads, and we'll come back with Niall Morgan. All right, delighted to say that All-Ireland champion Niall Morgan joins us on the line now. How does that sound, Niall, a week later, All-Ireland champion Niall Morgan?
It still hasn't fully sunk in yet, I have to say. Still a bit surreal, but it's what I suppose it's all the hard work has been for that was my ninth year, and you were sort of thinking that it was never going to happen, so pretty special.
You're back to school today, I can see. You might not know, but I've seen your school. I did a show up in Eden Dark last Thursday night before the All-Ireland. I was brought on a tour of Eden Dark, which didn't last long. I saw three things. I saw the church, I saw the school that Niall Morgan works in, and I saw Darren McCurry's house. That's the tour of Eden Dark I got.
Yeah, I don't even live in Eden Dark, so you couldn't even got to see mine, but they should have brought you I'm sure you've seen the hall just down the road there as well.
Oh, I saw that too, yeah.
That's where the new school is going to be built in the years to come. So it's a real, real hot spot up in Eden Dark.
I was actually, when I saw Darren McCurry's house, it's right beside the Eden Dark pitch. And I straight away thought of the league match against Kerry where he scored that sideline. And I was like, Jesus, he could never have missed. That's how close his house has been. So come here, are you just back to work today, or how did the celebrations go? Have they died down now, or what's the story?
I think most of the boys have finally realised they have to go back to work at some stage. The principal, Lynn Dark, was really good to me. She gave me the week off, so I'm just back today. But there's great excitement and buzz in the school, and we actually had club games yesterday, so it was back to earth with a bang. And we were 8 points up after 10 minutes and beat by a point. So back to the sob stories and the usual club life. But it was nice to get back out and play.
Nothing left in the tank. I was reading your diary in the Irish Examiner there, and I think you bowed out on the Tuesday night, and then you were saying that they kept going on the Wednesday. And I was laughing reading this because some lads ended up on a bus to Belfast, and I was just picturing them all being in some old timers pub, no women in it, and the young lads all going crazy. I'm getting out of here and headed on into Belfast. Am I warm?
Yeah, quite warm. Yeah, and there was a few of the older boys went too. It wasn't just the younger ones. There was boys still going on Saturday night. So I'm too old for that crack. Two young kids, it's just not worth it for the early mornings.
Yeah, you'll never recover from it. Come here, you've done a lot of media since. I was looking at your diary as well. You did BBC Radio Ulster at 8 a.m. on the Monday after the Saturday. You did Off the Ball then you did BBC Sports Round Extra, and then you did a GAA social podcast with Conor Myler. Were you conscious to do all that? I was thinking, isn't that fantastic for Tyrone supporters to be able to hear the lads the day after, or 2 days after? Were you conscious of giving something to the fans by doing that media?
No, I'm contrary to what some believe, I'm actually quite open and don't mind doing media. I suppose one of the more experienced players, and like there was a couple of years where I didn't really want to talk because I wasn't playing that well and I needed to concentrate on the playing side of things. And but I sort of felt like as I got older, it's like a bit of a burden that I suppose one of the more experienced players should take on. And I'm comfortable in how to answer questions, and I don't say too much controversial, but I like to, you know, give people an insight into what I'm really like. And I know that I've got a bit of a persona on the pitch, and I know, listening to yourself, Wally, you've given me a couple of jives over the last few years, but it's entirely different. You know, whenever you cross the white lines, you sometimes you have to play to, you know, what other people feel that you're going to be like. And like I'll be quite a nervous character, so I suppose it gets me out of being nervous. And with regard to the media, like it sort of gives people a light into what it's really like to walk in my shoes. And I enjoy doing the media stuff, and I enjoy answering questions and the challenges that it throws at you. And sometimes it's actually difficult not to say something controversial, because what's going on in your head is entirely different to what you say. But yeah, I try to be as open as I can.
I think, like, I mean, a lot of people's everybody's introduction to you, Niall, was that game in Ballybuffet in 2013. It was your first championship game. Yeah, you'd played in a league final and stuff in the lead up to that, but the big championship game in Ballybuffet, you know, you were cupping the ears, you were winding up the Donegal fans, which was grand, but then you started missing a few frees. And I think a lot of people might have developed a perception of you based off that game. And, you know, I actually think it's taken until this year for you nearly to kind of rid that.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a row that people have beat my back with basically for right up until this year probably. And to be fair, I probably deserved a lot of the criticism. It was silly of me at that stage, and you know, it was an experience. And I've said on a number of occasions that I probably didn't feel like I was ready to play county football, but then because I was playing well, that I felt that it was easy. And it was probably a good job that it happened early in my career and not later on, because if I had went through that season unscathed, God knows what I would have done then the following year. But it's nice to sort of get that monkey off my back, I suppose. And I know I've been no stranger to the, you know, different things that have happened in games, and like, you know, I'm no stranger to the limelight and the media perception. But it's that's the way football goes. And like one of the things that somebody told me one time was, don't worry, somebody will do something next weekend and you'll be old news and nobody want to talk about you. Like, and it's the same whenever you play well. Like you play well for a week and then, you know, you're forgotten about and move on to somebody else.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you're a bit of a showman. There's nothing to be, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you like to be in the thick of the action. You often strike me that you're bored in the goals. You obviously play midfield for Eden Dork, and you're just mad to get into the action. And like, I mean, I don't see anything really wrong with that. I have to hold my hands up. In the Monaghan game, I was saying, where is this lad going? Like, I mean, you were up near the Monaghan 21 metre line or yard line at that stage.
That was Peter Donnelly's fault, but because we had planned for me to, I actually done it against Donegal as well, but it wasn't really noticed as much. But we pressed out and the gaps were patting, and then where Rory liked to kick the ball, and I'd actually went up to fill space, but Monaghan made a sub that time, and Petey was marking McCarthy, and McCarthy was coming off, and I was screaming at Petey to come out, and Peter Donnelly shared to Petey to stay in nets and for me to push on.
Right.
And I think it was Woods had come on, and he was going to stand and let me mark, but begging, he started laughing and started pulling Woods towards. And the more he went, the more Peter Donnelly screamed at me to keep going. And I was thinking, I no more want to be up here, Pete. Like, you know, there's a long way back if this ball goes over my head. But I don't think they didn't get anything too much out of it. And it worked out. But yeah, I could play out for the club, and I like to get involved, and I like to get in the ball, and I enjoy sort of playing that bit of a sweeper role. Again, the experience probably of being able to play it now, and that's sort of the role that I play with the club too, so I can read the game well enough. But yeah, nets can be boring enough at times if depending on the game, but the way we've played this year, it's been a bit more exciting because we're more man-to-man, and there is more opportunity to cut ball out, whereas beforehand it was very systemated and you were hard to break down, so there wasn't as many goal chances, so it was more just kickouts, and that's not all I want to be there for. I want to get involved in open play as well and do what I can.
Goalkeepers are obviously getting involved in open play an awful lot more. Like, I mean, the sweeping thing is definitely new. Like, the ball you intercepted in the final and came out and then just drove it down. You were sticking a couple of kickouts on Conor McKenna. I think you gave that ball to Conor McKenna. It went through his hands, and obviously McCurry with a decent effort. We haven't seen goalkeepers kind of coming out to intercept balls that far out before.
It's just like, I sort of try to play on the edge of where the other team's kick pass, you can kick it. So, like, basically that I'm not getting lobbed, even though I got lobbed against Kerry, but I suppose that's the risk you're taking. And I back myself that I can read the game well, and, you know, at times it can be cocky about it, but, you know, I've been given the license to do it by Brian Fergal, as long as I keep it simple and don't try anything too fancy, and always try to stay in around the middle of the D anyway. It's not that I'm going, you know, miles out of the net, and the two male players were making the same run that time, and I knew there was only one place he could kick the ball, so it just took a bit of a gamble on it, I suppose, and luckily cut it out, and then had space to keep going, and it kept going, and Conor peeled off in behind, and we'd talked about a bit of training that if he'd done that to just launch it over the top, and he flicked it on, and Darren had the goal chance, and it was great save by Rob, but it would have been nice if it had come off now.
Oh, it definitely would have been one of the greatest goals scored in an All-Ireland final. We have to talk about the kickouts in the All-Ireland final, Niall, because you have really, like, I mean, you have totally justified my analysis here on the show, because I've been banging on about long kickouts since the start of this year. I think it was the Down Donegal game where a kickout was won. The wing back was dispossessed and Donegal scored a goal. Now, that went down as a kick out one, but a goal was conceded off it. Yeah. So when you're looking at the stats afterwards, well, we won that kick out. Yeah, but what good was the kick out that was won? And I think maybe you might tell us who kind of decided on the kick out strategy. Is it left, you know, do you get a good say in it? You know, is it the management? You know, it's very, very obvious that you made you focused on going long the majority of the times.
Yeah, well, like, we've been probably known to be, you know, a short kick-out team over the last number of years, and teams are pressing us hard, and I suppose I can kick the ball quite far, so it was more a case of getting the ball over the top of as many men as possible, and like, we got absolutely hammered on the short kick-out against Kerry down in Killarney, and in the semi-final we went long a lot, and again, like, contrary to belief, like, against Kerry I probably was striking the ball a lot better than against Mayo, and it was just we weren't getting the numbers to the break as quick, and, you know, the analyst after the match, I suppose, tore us to shreds and said that the kick-out malfunctioned, but, you know, we played the ball in Kerry's half and it was hard for them to keep pressing up, get back, keep pressing up, get back. Whereas, you know, if we had kept trying to go short, you know, and as you say, you might have won a kick out, but next you know it's turned over and it's a point or it's a goal, and people don't really look at that side of things. And against Kerry, we probably lost a lot of our long kick outs, and but they didn't actually score that much off them. Because they had to break so many of us down. And against Mayo, it was probably the same idea. They squeezed us last year in the league game, in the second half in particular, and they got a lot of joy out of it, and they probably thought of doing the same again. But we had worked on getting numbers around the break this time, and it worked out for us. And like, we probably lost a number of kickouts against Mayo as well, but, you know, whenever you have midfielders like Conn and Brand who can catch or flick on, or, you know, whenever the communication's good, it definitely helps.
Like, I mean, can you see this being a decent shift away from these short kickouts now? Because, like, they had become so, like, I don't know, in fashion that every team was doing them. They could have a 6'6" midfielder and they're still going short most of the time. And the whole idea was that possession is more important than 50-50. And it's like they never thought that, right, possession at fullback line is still a very, very dangerous possession. Whereas if you give it 50-50, if you do win that possession, it is less likely you'll gain possession. But if you do win it, look at the chance you have in front of you. Like you say, Kennedy or Conn with a flick down. And if someone runs onto that flick down, you know, you're bearing down on goals.
Yeah, I think it has to be mixed up. Like, against, that's probably the biggest difference in Kerry and Mayo game, that we mixed it up and we went short at times. And like, if you keep pumping the ball long, the other team's just going to sit back and they're going to get numbers to the break as well, and they're going to constantly gamble. So if you can mix it up and, you know, go short now and again, which keeps them, you know, pressed up. But like, like we would have tended to nearly try to force the short away, and we've got caught on a number of occasions with that. And whereas I say, if you go long and you're landing the ball in the opposition's half, and you know, even if they win it, they've maybe 10 of your players to get through, and they have to, you know, work hard to get their score. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. If you're offering up easy scores, and it's easy for the odd team to target a specific player in a team and nearly leave him free, and it's hard for you to turn the kick out away. Like if the odd team fancy a player to get turned over, we have done the throne a number of occasions where we nearly pick a player and tempt the keeper into kicking it to him, because we know we'll have a good chance at taking the ball off him.
Yeah.
Whereas whenever you're going long, it might be a 50-50, but this is the first time Throne's, and I can never remember it anyway. I got two boys at 6'5" standing midfield, and why wouldn't you use them? And then you've got Connor there at 11 as well. You've got Matty whenever he comes out. And you've got a couple of boys that are actually deceivingly good in the air. Like Petey Hart's brilliant in the air, and like he mightn't be the tallest, but he usually gets a mismatch because the whole team's so focused on the bigger boys. So there could be a shift, but it depends on the keeper's abilities and qualities as well. Like Donegal have been using it the last couple of years. Monaghan have been using it, like with Rory, and it just, I suppose it depends on how far your keeper can kick the ball and how accurate he is in the shorts as well.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, you mixed it up. You had 24 kickouts in the final. You have 15 of them went long, and then obviously 9 short. That, for me, that's a lovely balance. It's keeping the team guessing, but it's predominantly going long. And one other point on that, Niall, is that like a lot of people say it's 50-50 when you go long, and I've just said it. It's just like people say it without thinking about it. You know which side it's going, so you, like, I'm sure you have signals, so you have an advantage. It's nearly like a 60-40 because your players are going to that breaking ball faster than the other team who don't necessarily know where it's going. Would that be fair?
Yeah, well, like, we don't have actual signals as such, or we don't pick a particular side beforehand or anything. It's just you're trying to find a mismatch, and there usually is. If you look hard enough, there'll be a mismatch somewhere where somebody's got caught marking somebody they shouldn't, or
right,
somebody's a wee bit out of position. And I've been sort of trying to work on disguising the kickouts a wee bit more. I know I hit one to Kieran in the Kerry game where what he thought I was going left and went out wide right to him, and it's about keeping the other team guessing, and if you can get any sort of an advantage. And like our boys at training obviously know my kicking style and, you know, my run-up style and where it's most likely to be going. And then it's I suppose it would be more 60-40 to us if they have a fair idea of what area they have to get to for the breakdown.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the semi-final and all the controversy and the build-up to that. Now, because I was reading a quote, I think it was you were talking about it. You were talking about Brian and Fergal. They said that we don't feel we're capable of it, and we're not going to go down and put you boys in the spotlight and go down and get a hammering again, because it's already happened once this year and we'll take the flak. They offered it up to us. They said, is there anybody against this? And the players spoke. A few things in that is... how many players spoke for and how many players spoke against? What was the majority, obviously, were...
It was quite mixed, to be fair. There was a few boys were obviously sort of in the squad but not getting much game time. They obviously wanted to play because they felt it was their chance to get into the team. And then there was boys that, you know, were obviously still feeling effects and knew they weren't ready. And then there was boys speaking from a purely medical side of things, you know, with like a... Like with Darren, as I've said before, like Darren doesn't really speak that often. Whenever he does, people listen. He's one of them kind of characters.
Yeah.
And he just sort of said, look, if somebody drops in this pitch, you know, who's going to be to blame for this? Like, and it was probably the first time that everybody sort of thought about it in that kind of way. And it's not as if we were making it up. It's not like we're saying, oh, there's 8 boys with hamstring strains or quad strains or groin strains or whatever, or 12 boys are concussed or whatever. It was a pandemic, and I know we did get flack for it, and we took a big chance by saying we weren't going to play. And, you know, maybe we did have a fair idea that the GA would still play the game, and we took the risk based off that. But it's a... The medical evidence was there, and who are we to argue with that? And you could put on the bravado and say, oh, well, we want to play the match and go and play it, but it's not about that. Sometimes you have to look at the bigger picture, and, you know, if at that stage there was a lot of measures in place and restrictions in place, so you know, if it had been, you know, I know the restrictions are opening up a lot in the south now in the middle of October, and if it had been after that, we probably wouldn't have a leg to stand on. But on hindsight now, it worked out for us, and like it's probably still going to be a contentious moment for a lot of people, but it's happened, and there's been plenty of moments in years gone by that things have happened, and thankfully we came out on the right side of it.
So, like, I mean, there were 17, it's well publicised, 17 people tested positive. How many of those 17 were sick? Like, I mean, I think you had it and you weren't sick. You were, you know, going around, you just tested positive. Conor Myler as well. So how many were actually sick out of the 17?
It's genuinely hard to know, because boys were isolating, and you didn't ask, you just assume, you know, right, he's positive, and that's the way it is. I know there was a few boys came back to training and they genuinely looked ill even after their isolation, and you were sort of thinking, gee, like, you know, the whole point of it is you mightn't be sick on the outside, or you mightn't have symptoms, but you don't know what it's doing to the inside of your body, and, you know, that's the whole point of the isolation. And like, I wasn't sick. Yeah, I had a runny nose and a bit of tiredness, but I wasn't, like, it was like, I thought it was hay fever, basically. And but, like, whenever I came back, like, you're out for 10 days. You haven't trained for 10 days. You've lost that wee bit of sharpness, a bit of fitness. And, like, I know I'm only a goalkeeper, but I was feeling tired after trains and stuff. Like, so for the put boys in the spot and tell them to go and play against Kerry whenever they were going to be out of isolation for a couple of days, just would have been madness. And I like, everybody in a way wanted to play the match, but we had to be sensible about it too. Like,
yeah. So I suppose just the extra week, because most people agreed to give you a week. I was critical of giving you another week. Like, I mean, what I was wondering is, on that Saturday, the first week, you know, how many would have been too sick to have played that day? How many would you have been down that Saturday that couldn't have been able to tug out that day?
It's hard to say, because as much as boys were training, would they have been able to play a match? There's not a chance of it. Like, you know, it's hard. Like I said, I'm not a doctor. Like, you know, I can't pick and choose and decide how boys can play or how sick they are or whatever. We just made the call and said that we weren't going to be able to field a team that was capable of winning. So what was the point? Like, and then people said, oh, surely there's 26 boys in Tyrone, but it's not the point. Like, it's, you know, you can't just start saying, oh, should they're half fit or such can come in. He played a trial game last year, and it's not the point. It was us standing our ground saying, look, we're not fit to play and we're not going to play, and we weren't willing to take a backward step, I suppose, and say it did work out. But, you know, that was us standing our ground. The GAA could have stood their ground, Kerry could have stood their ground, but they were willing to give us the extra week, so we weren't going to complain.
Yeah, and you got your siege mentality out of it, which you Tyrone boys absolutely love as well, so it all worked.
We never have a siege mentality.
You kind of live off them. It's like Tyrone against the world, don't you? Like, whatever way you like to tap into that.
It is Tyrone against the world, though, isn't it?
Well, you were talking about Tyrone's reputation. I was reading since the final, and I say we've a fair bit to play for that ourselves. We're not a clean cut team. Well, maybe we are a bit now compared to what we were in the past. And maybe I go along with that as well. You know, the press around Tyrone, COVID thing aside, this year has been just overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, like it's a bit like, I suppose, like even my career, I suppose, like we mentioned at the start how, like, times are sort of changing and people are starting to realise that this isn't the same Tyrone team as before, and there might have been a nastier streak in it, and, like, you know, maybe it's like mud sticks, I suppose. And but I always just laughed, because every team that we played were just as bad as us, and you were getting just as much grief as we were given, and it always seemed to be our things that were highlighted. And I suppose, like, in a way, it added to, as you say, a siege mentality. But in another way, it was kind of laughable that, you know, it was as if, you know, Tyrone are the only people that do this sort of thing, and they're a disgrace, and they're always a disgrace. And but it was kind of funny at times, like, I have to say, like, seeing people getting so angry over it, and like we were just playing football. Like, if people came to club games in Tyrone, they would really get their eyes open, like, because it's dog eat dog. Like there's like Bran and Connor marking each other yesterday in midfield, and like after playing midfield together all year, like, and like there was no way holding back or anything. Like, or if Bran came to tackle me or Darren or whatever, and like it's just, that's just the way we are. Like it's dog eat dog with Tyrone, and you know, if you want to play nice, we'll play nice. You want to play nasty, we'll play nasty, and it's we're happy to go either way. And you know, this year we've really added the sort of open football style as well, and showed people that if you want to go defensive, we can do that. If you want to go and play open football, we can do that. And we've done it this year, but that's not saying going into next year that things could change. Like, and you know, you go and get two or three hammerings, and that's the joys of football, isn't it? Like last year we got hammered by Galway, and then we turned around, we beat Kerry maybe, and then we got beat by Monaghan, and then we turned around and beat Dublin. And you know, it's just the joys of football, and that's why we love it. Things can change so much overnight.
Yeah, two more questions for you before you go, because I know you're under pressure for time. I have to say, I'd say you're related to a lot of people. This is from your diary in the Examiner as well, which was very good. I have to say, you ate Cocoa Pops and orange juice the morning before the match for breakfast, and then most impressively, you had a barbecue chicken baguette with some peppers and cheese for your lunch. You just got yourself a chicken roll in a petrol station or a news agents, I presume. This is how many players around the country can relate to that?
Well, there's not too many would openly say it. I think there's plenty could relate to it, but there's a lot of them hiding it away and hiding their food diaries. But look, I'm sort of well known in our squad for just eating what I want when I want. I suppose as a goalkeeper I can get away with it a wee bit more, but I don't really think that. Yes, it's important what you eat, and you can't be eating like really bad stuff all the time, but I think sometimes it gets blown out of proportion, and people, you know, are eating foods that they don't even enjoy, and I just don't get that at all. Like there's more to life, and like you're burning off enough calories and stuff, and you know, if people are going to tell me that what I ate the day before one game is going to really really affect things that much, you know, they're definitely spoofing. Like it's more, like to me you have to be comfortable, you have to be eating stuff you enjoy, and you know, what I eat really reflects my mood. Like if I'm eating something that I like, you know, I'm happy and I get on with things. And see, if I'm forced to eat stuff that I don't enjoy, like it's a constant battle. Like, and I'll complain and I'll moan and I'll be in everybody's ear, wasn't that rotten and wasn't that nice? And you know, so eating something else, and next you know, I'm bringing the mood of the camp down. So just like, to me, it's just let me eat what I want and I'll be happy and everybody can get on with things. Like,
yeah, I think we could have a lot in common here, Niall. There's no doubt about that. But one point you did make about it, which I thought was interesting, is the day before in All-Ireland, you're already nervous, so food isn't high up on your list of priorities. You have to force yourself to eat anyway. So why not eat something that's tasty than something that's absolutely rotten?
Yeah, like I'm, like as I said earlier, like I'm a nervous character, and I remember the Monday before the Kerry game, like the Kerry game's on the Saturday and I'm eating my dinner, and Ciara said to me, are you all right? And I was just like, the nerves are going already here. Like I'm starting to panic, and like that was on the Monday. Like, so I'd still got 4 or 5 days of that ahead of me, and like all week I just ate what I wanted just to get food in my stomach. I just needed energy. Like, so what's the point in me wolfing down dry pasta and dry chicken and all this crack that you see people eating? Like, it's just, to me it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, get energy in. Like, it wasn't that I sat down to a plate of chicken goujons and chips for curry sauce, like, which I had inquired about getting before games before, like just to test the water. But no, it's, to me, you have to be comfortable and you have to eat what you enjoy, and that's just the way I go.
Yeah. Final question. What do you be fighting with Cottle McShane about in training? You were talking about that on the field after the match.
Oh well, like we've never actually came to blows, but we're just so competitive. Like, and like Cahill would be like calling for free kicks, and I'd be telling him to get up and telling him he's diving and stuff, and he'd be, you know, chipping me, and I'd be saying, "Would you do that in the match?" And you know, it's just ongoing war of words. Like, but we always shake hands at the end of training and get on with things. And like I know I said he's more mighty, that was maybe a bit harsh. Like, but we do get on quite well, and we get on well with everybody on the team. But I'm ultra competitive. Like if I had been asked about 10 of the odd players, I probably would have given the same answer, that I'd be fighting with them every night of training. And I'm so competitive, and I'm probably one of them sort of people that rather than talk about all the positives going on, I like to address the things that aren't going right and get them sorted, because I just don't get why everything that's said has to be positive and, you know, pat in the back, and you done really well there, whenever, you know, something else needs tidied up. And I think, you know, that's probably what's helped us this year, like Pete in particular, and Collie and Joe, and then Des with myself, like all the coaches, like they're not afraid to address what's going wrong and spot and fix. And, you know, Pete's brilliant in training, where he, like, if somebody does something that was really ridiculously silly, he'll just blow the whistle and tell them to give them the ball back and tell them to think about what they're doing, and we'll restart. Like, and that's the way I am anyway. I like to address things on the spot, and I suppose sometimes me and Cahill just clash over that, and me and Sluddy clash over that, and me and Matty clash over that, and me and half the team clash over that. But that's just the nature of it. And I say, everybody shakes hands at the end of training. We know it's for the better. We know that it's only improving things. So there's nobody actually fell out or anything.
So this is just incredible, that not only when Tyrone players make inter-county level and play other counties, they like to be really ultra competitive, a bit of trash talking. Not only club football in Tyrone is ultra competitive and a bit of trash talking, the A versus B games at county training turns into ultra competitive trash talking.
We had to stop playing AVBs because the B's used to always hammer the A's and give us a serious mouthful. So it was that had to stop. So now teams are just mixed, and you have bibs and non-bibs, just to try to keep things in an even keel, like, because people are looking jerseys, and some nights it got hot and heavy. And like I always said, you could charge into our in-house games, like they're lightning fast and they're aggressive, and everybody's looking to start. And I suppose the same in every county, but that's why you're there, and that's why you want to be there, and that's why you continue to play. Even at this stage of my career, that's why I can't wait to get back come the start of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, come here, listen, I've taken up enough of your time. I know you're in school. I could have talked to you for another hour about different things in football and everything. Come here, congratulations on winning the All-Ireland and having a brilliant year. You're a shoe-in for an All-Star. You might not like to admit it, but that's the best year you've ever had, and congratulations on it. Thanks for joining us on the show now.
No problem. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Great stuff from Niall there. All right, that's it. That's all we have time for today. We'll be back on Thursday as usual, and we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.